very important to remove from the soldier every possible ounce or fraction of an ounce of weight. A man soldier must be protected against the weather. He must be able to carry ammunition, arms, protective devices, etc. So it wasn't easy to find adequate, even superior material with lightweight. Anyway, we worked at it, I think, fairly successfully. Then later on, I was given research and development, including everything connected with equipment, food, nutrition problems, etc. I have many documents here which explain in detail the work to be done. We got up early, Edna and I got up early, and I came back to the house late, to the apartment late. We worked Saturday, and we worked Sunday. My secretary lived in the same apartment building we did. On Sunday, I would tell her I wasn't going to the office. But she had an arrangement with the doorman who would tip her off. So if I went to the office on Sunday, she'd show up there half an hour later. She was a rather remarkable girl, daughter of a miner. I think father had become very sick after spending his life mining zinc. At the end of the war, I asked her about her overtime payment, because she had worked extraordinarily long hours and over weekends. She told me she had not applied for overtime. I asked her why, and she told me that after all, it was her contribution to the war effort. Since the girl was really poor, I think that was an admirable viewpoint, and I've seen very little of that devotion around. Towards the end of the war, during that war period, Edna worked very hard. She was manager of the Junior Army Navy Guild organization, which was called Django, J-A-N-G-O, and it was a volunteer organization taking care of soldiers traveling in and out of Washington or having particular problems in Washington, or their family, I don't remember exactly. Mrs. Robert Patterson, wife of a very outstanding Undersecretary of War, was the chairman. Edna had to recruit personnel, and most of her personnel were made up of children, particularly girls of Army, Navy, and Air Force officers, and of course others. They had canteens, they had all sorts of organizations, and Edna would be up and out most time of the day and very, very often during the night. She worked for another organization, but I don't remember it. Later on, Mrs. Spatz, S-P-A-A-T-Z, wife of General Spatz of the Air Force, Air Force asked her to head up the volunteer committee or the money raising committee, I don't remember which. I think it's money raising committee for the Washington Symphony Orchestra. So anyway, she worked very hard during the war. She had to do some entertaining, sometimes more than she could handle, because we had so many people coming to help us in the army on our work, but very often I'd bring them home for dinner. And I quite often showed up at the house with one or two scientists or industrial people that Edna didn't expect. So she had to do whatever she could to get food tickets and buy things so as to be able to feed them. We had our old Chrysler car, which kept on working for a great many years, which she needed for jungle work and for food procurement, but somehow she always managed to have enough gasoline. We were fortunate in that she found the space in the little garage very close to where we lived, so that made her life easier. We went out very little, and again it was usually with people who came to help us in the War Department. Fortunately, we were very close to the Statler, the Carlton, the Mayflower hotels, so we could always walk there, and it made it very, very easy. Much easier than if we had lived in the suburbs. Full stop, we never went to a movie or to a theater at all, outside of once. An assistant to the head of a chemical warfare, General Porter, was Colonel MacArthur. He was an extremely pleasant person, and I had much to do with him. And one day he came to my office and he said, "Look, my wife will be in a play on such day." And he gave me the name of the theater. He did not give me the name of the theater. He said, "She'll be in a play at the theater on a certain night. Here are two tickets your wife might like to go." So I thought it would be nice to take Edna to the theater, so I told him I'd accept the tickets. And what was the name of the theater? So he looked at me very startled and he said, "My man, don't you know there is only one theater in Washington?" I said, "No, I didn't know." So about 10 minutes. So I took Edna to the theater. And to be nice to my colonel friend, I had told him after the theater, "Why don't you come to your apartment, which is not far from your theater, and it'd be nice to spend a few minutes together." Well, we went to the theater, and Edna loved it because Helen Hayes was the leading actress. We went to her apartment, and a few minutes later arrived Colonel MacArthur with his wife, Helen Hayes. Of course, neither of us, neither Edna or I, had connected the name MacArthur with Helen Hayes. So, of course, it was very exciting, particularly for Edna, to have Helen Hayes and her very attractive husband with us for a period of time. Stop. We had, I dictate, we had the wonderful opportunity of meeting very many outstanding people, particularly in the army. We received leading British commanders or research people. I remember that after the war in Europe was over, General Hodges, commander of our First Army, spent his first evening in Washington having a little dinner at Scott Circle with us. All those gentlemen were very outstanding. And in a way, amongst them, I felt there was a higher ratio of devoted, able people than usually one meets in business. I am happy to say that I have great many photographs of them and also letters. I kept in close touch with army commanders, corps commanders, division commanders, about their equipment. After all, they were my clients, and I wanted to please them, and by doing our job well, we were saving life. I had the great opportunity to see General Marshall several times, and someday I'll write stories or anecdotes about some of the things that he told me. So I would say that our stay in Washington was the most interesting one. One that one had to worry about because mistakes were costly, not only in terms of lives, but in terms of dates to be met for certain operations. Towards the end of the war, or after the war was over, Secretary Patterson called me in and told me that they were going to form G5 on the General Staff. And it would be new department for research and development. He said that General Eisenhower and he were of the opinion that I should be asked to take it. And I told him I couldn't because I had to go back to Harvard or somewhere and start earning my living again. But since I had very few years of service, my army pay wasn't very high, and I just had to work. And while we could live on our salary, we certainly could not save on it. Well, he said, we're going to ask then somebody else to take it. But because of your experience, would you be willing to go in for a period of months as his deputy? So I said, yes, I will do that. Instead, we were asking General Doolittle. One day, General Doolittle, whom I know, came into my office all excited, and he said, look, they want me to come back and take that job, but he says, nobody tells me, Jimmy, you have to take it. He said, if they told me, Jimmy, you have to take it, I probably would. But instead, they start their conversation by saying, Jimmy, you probably don't want it. So we said, what the hell? So I'm not taking it. They finally ended by taking an officer who to my mind was not at all the right man, who had a very ordinary career. But he was regular army. At that time he was in Walter Reed trying to get himself let out of the army for disability. So they took him. I stayed there for several months. Did not particularly enjoy it, as there was no hope to do anything very constructive. And everybody was sort of passed out and fed up with army expenditures and everything. In the meantime, however, I should say that the Secretary of the Treasury, Mr. Snyder, had called me and told me that we had a very big problem, which was the disposal of army surplus. Army, Navy, Air Force, surplus of all type. And that they had an organization going, I don't remember the name of it, and I think it was under Mr. Symington, who later on became Secretary of Air and the Senator. Mr. Snyder told me that they were going to merge all the activities on surplus into an organization called War Assets Administration. And they said that he had come to the conclusion that I should take it. And I had given him the same answer as I gave later on, but I had to go back and earn my living. Well, Mr. Snyder said, all right, can you pick somebody to head it up? And I told him the ideal man was Lieutenant General Edmund Gregory, who had been the successful and outstanding quartermaster general since before the war and still there now. So he said, all right, we'll ask General Gregory, will you go in as his deputy? So I said, all right, but the army has just asked me to go on the general staff for a while. Well, he said, we'll arrange things with the army, and he said, the army can wait anyway, but war assets can't wait. So General Gregory was made head of war assets, and I went in as a deputy. I then left the quartermaster corps. That work was interesting. It was bewildering. I had more friends than I could cope with. Governors, presidents of the companies would come looking for something to be purchased at a low cost, low price. It was a huge organization with surplus all over the world. I inherited about 14 divisions. Most of them were people that were or were not fitted for the job. I had there one interesting experience, which I can't recite here, but I have notes in my files. It's very interesting, very peculiar, but I suppose I should not talk about it. But I have notes on it. Anyway, that lasted for 3 or 4 months. I tried to get an organization going. By that time, General Gregory had gotten some physical trouble, had to have an operation, and he resigned. Was replaced by someone of very little distinction, So beyond the story I might tell about that is that later on we found that people were offered jobs without the organization knowing who they were. It was one of the worst cases of distributing jobs to please politicians. I even understood them, so records showing that people who had died were still being offered jobs. I might tell one story of interest, or at least of amusement. One day a senator called me and said he was on the committee supervising us. Could he come? And he wanted to come and ask me our plans, so he came and I told him what our plans were, and I remember telling him they would be announced the next day. I said they are confidential until announced. And that's that. That afternoon, the newspapers in Washington came out with a statement from the senator saying, quote, Senator so-and-so demands that war assets does as follows. This confirmed the idea had gotten during the war as to the fact that you could find outstanding senators in Washington and also some others who are quite different. I think that's good.